Chapter 3
"What do you mean I can't go after her?" Barry cries out, throwing his hands in the air. "You let Eobard go off on his stupid noble hunting party! You let Hunter track halfway across the land in search of a stupid flower to give to his girlfriend, who he then dumped! I'm looking for a kidnapped person! It's significantly more important!"
King Harrison is unmoved. In fact, he barely looks up from his table where he's paging through a tome of paper with next week's schedules on it. Edward Thawne is, I believe, already planning to go after her himself, is he not? He says calmly. And as the girl's fiancé and a well-liked and renowned knight, it is perfectly appropriate for him to do so. Unless you have some undeclared feelings for the girl... Barry makes a strangled noise. I didn't think so. Permission denied, Barry. And I'll be putting out orders to make sure I know if you're seen anywhere near the castle walls, so don't even think of disobeying me.
Father, please, Barry says. This is Iris. We grew up together.
Sir Thawne is already going, the king repeats.
I know he's already going. I don't want to get in his way, but I'm not sure if you've noticed. The land is wide and broad, and we have virtually no leads. Having two people searching in different directions simply makes sense.
I was under the impression that you had managed to put together a rather complicated map pinpointing the location of each kidnapped girl over the last few days, and successfully located something of a pattern, or at least a direction for him to start with. The king says coolly. Sir Thawne will follow your instructions, and, should he fail to find her or her assailant, will backtrack in an attempt to find additional clues. He is a knight, Barry. I'm sure he'll find her.
But he might not find her before something bad happens to her.
Finally, his father looks up. Barry, he says with a sigh, this is not how it works.
What do you mean?
The girls all kidnapped on the day before their wedding, King Harrison says. It's obviously supernatural in nature, and when the supernatural is involved, it's not merely a rescue mission, it's a quest. And when it comes to a quest involving brides, only true love can possibly hope to fulfill it. Anyone else who tries to go is doomed to failure and likely death. I'm not letting you throw away your life on this.
But...
No. Barry, and that's final, unless you can present me with some new evidence that indicates you know where the girls are and what took them. I have no intention of changing my mind. Besides, we have a more pressing issue. Your brothers should be waiting outside. Please call them in. Barry's fists are clenched so tightly his nails are digging into his palms. He is so unbelievably angry right now. But he knows he can't defy his father. The guards love Joe and Barry, and they love Iris, but if the king gives the orders he threatened to give, and he no doubt will, Barry will find himself utterly deserted and without allies. He'd never get anywhere near the city gates, much less with the supplies he'd need for a journey of the magnitude likely necessary to find Iris. He lets his brothers into the room. King Harrison looks up at them, folding his hands together on the table. Our apples are going missing, he announces.
Apples? Barry exclaims. That's the more pressing issue?
Barry, if you can't keep your temper, I will be forced to have you locked in your room until you can, the king snaps. And yes, the apples, the ones we have promised every noble in the land will be served at the presentation of our new scientific discoveries relating to the star and its properties. It began on the second night of the exhibition. The guards were there, as usual, but the supply of apples was clearly depleted come morning, and the guards swore they didn't see a thing. I replaced them with other guards, veterans, who should have had no difficulty stopping a thief, but the next night we saw a similar depletion. Yesterday I doubled the guard watching the orchard, but to no avail. One of the trees has been picked clean, with some inroads made onto another. We calculated that we would have a certain number of apples available to feed our guests, with some left over to spare. We are rapidly nearing the point where we will not have any to spare. Eobard looks concerned, Hunter indifferent, and Barry's pretty sure he just looks furious. Eobard, I'm assigning you the task of guarding the apples tonight, King Harrison declares.
You may have any resources you require. If you fail, Hunter will guard them tomorrow night. If he fails, the third night is Barry's. Any longer than that, and we will have to seriously consider harvesting them prematurely in order to make sure that we have enough to feed everyone. And I do not want to do that. Is that understood? Yes, sir, they all mutter, Eobard already frowning in thought, and Hunter looking more interested in the face of a challenge. Barry's still seething. King Harrison studies the three of them with a dissatisfied expression. Let me re-emphasize the importance of this. I will not be embarrassed before all of my scientific contemporaries by something as meaningless as a thief. If none of you three can succeed, maybe I really should give the kingdom to whoever can win a contest of scientific merit, which wouldn't be any of you three, much to my disappointment. Maybe you shouldn't have fostered us all out so you could work on your experiments undisturbed by children, Barry thinks, uncharitably perhaps, but not necessarily incorrectly. But I have promised myself to give the three of you the chance to show your own merit to me in your own way, and I suppose this is one way to do it. If you all fail, I will be forced to take the duty myself, and I am occupied with the exhibition. Do not fail me. With that, the king dismisses them, and Eobard immediately goes off, muttering to himself. Barry shakes his head and goes back home. Joe is beside himself, unsurprisingly, and Henry isn't much better. Wally's come home and is trying desperately to keep the house together. But what do you even do in a situation like this? No one knows how Iris was taken. Like all the other brides, she disappeared from her room, which was locked and watched. Joe was in there himself, chatting with her and keeping her company. She was alone only long enough to duck into the restroom, but she never came back out again. It was impossible. Worse, their suspicions of supernatural involvement were supported when Eddie, who'd been down the hall, reported having seen frost on the windows. Frost. In midsummer. Barry has no idea what to do with that. Joe is convinced that they're dealing with either a very powerful sorcerer or a supernatural creature, and either way, that means trouble. Barry is doubtful. There are plenty of ways that ice could show up without any magical intervention. Iceboxes are a thing, after all. And his foster parents' superstitions aside, he's certain it was some clever human perpetrator trying to throw people off track. But given the seriousness of the situation, Barry keeps his doubts to himself and collects what information he can, no matter how outlandish. Eddie's picking up his gear and trying to apologize to David and Joe for having to take time away from his duties with the city guard, while they roll their eyes at him and try to pepper him with advice. He looks up when Barry comes in. No luck, he says glumly. He won't let me go. You're fine. You can go. No problems there, he adds hastily at Eddie's alarmed look. But I'm officially forbidden from helping out in any way other than monetary. You let me take everything I could possibly use from the royal armory, Barry. That's more than enough, Eddie says, with what could be, on another day, a faint smile. But is currently too affected by the pain in his eyes to qualify. Barry's heart hurts for him. This was supposed to be his honeymoon, him and Iris starting out on their married life together, and instead, Eddie is arming back up to be the knight he usually pretends he's not. Even stuff I didn't really want or need, to be honest. And the rest of you, stop adding stuff to my bags. It'll only unbalance them. Did he say why you couldn't go? He said that it's a quest, Barry said, crossing his arms in front of him. So you should be the only one to go, because anyone who goes with you, or instead of you, is doomed to fail. Well, there's no problem on the true love portion of the equation, so Iris should be back in no time, David says, pasting on a smile. Are you sure you have enough supplies? Barry asks, worrying his lower lip with his teeth. I could give you my horse. Firstly, I have a horse, Eddie interrupts firmly. More than one, in fact, and I will be taking two with me. Secondly, Barry, no offense, but Sissy isn't exactly the sort of horse I'd take out of the city. Honestly, the fact that you get that pudgy thing out of the stable at all impresses me, Joe says, smiling weakly. Henry, sitting beside him, snorts. You're all very cruel. I'm telling Sissy, and then he won't love any of you anymore. At least until you pay a fine in sugar and apples, Barry says, shaking his head in amusement that quickly fades. David, any more word from the other cities and towns about the girls?
A few more missives. I've left them on your desk upstairs. We're expecting more tomorrow and the day after that. I told them to send anything they had, no matter how insignificant, from the local stories and legends to eyewitness reports and any unusual signs. I saw your, work board. It was very impressive. Barry had dragged a giant board into his room and covered it with maps, stories, drawings, anything that could help get them an idea of where to find Iris, or what had taken her. He nods, scowling a little.
I'll look them over. I don't know how much more we can find just from that, but I'll do my best.
I'm sure you will, Henry says quietly. Eddie as well. Thank you both.
You know how much Iris means to me, Eddie says, the light of the sun catching his golden hair and making him glow a little, even as his face fills with sincerity. Barry can see, looking at him, why his father thought that this might very well be a quest for true love. Eddie is everything a hero in a fairy tale could hope to be, brave and true, strong and loyal, and desperately in love. Everything a noble knight is meant to stand for.
I'll do everything in my power to bring her back, safe and unharmed.
And kick the ass of whatever bastard did this, Joe growls.
Eddie nods and heads out the door, Joe and Henry and David trailing behind him. Barry goes upstairs to keep working. He doesn't know what he'll find, if anything, but he's determined to put in every minute he can. Unlike the opening ceremonies, his attendance isn't required at the various exhibitions going on, and to be frank, he's rather lost his taste for it. Not even the thought of maybe meeting Len again could entice him to attend. He desperately wants to meet the man again, as that was the only bright spot of the last week. But Len seemed fairly certain that they wouldn't meet again that easily, which probably meant that he wasn't attending the rest of the exhibition. Barry's heart beats faster at the mere thought of Len, but he has to regretfully put that aside for now. Iris is family, and that's more important than a romance that has only just begun. Not that Barry could really enjoy dating Len if Iris wasn't there to share in every up and down in the relationship, just as he'd stood by her when she was dating Eddie. Besides, if Barry can track down whoever's doing these kidnappings, he'll be good enough at finding people that locating Len would be a snap. Wally comes in after Barry's been working for an hour or two, settling down quietly.
Anything I can do to help? He asks.
Barry and Wally haven't always gotten along great. Barry had been fostered with Joe and Henry fairly young, and they had taken him in as the son they never had. Henry's first wife, Nora, had divorced him and moved to live with her family in Starling years before, after the accident that had claimed the life of their unborn son. Though they were still good friends, after Joe's wife Francine had abruptly abandoned him and Iris, Henry had come to fill the gap left behind. It had been just Joe and Henry and Barry and Iris for quite a while. It was only later, when Wally was nearly 8, that Joe discovered that Francine had been pregnant when she had left him. Wally had been resentful at first, particularly of Barry and Iris's closeness, and of their tightly knit family structure, of which he had been deprived, until his mother's untimely death. For his part, he had been terrified that he would be replaced in his foster parents' hearts by their true-born son. He had looked at his own family gatherings and the thought of being abandoned to that distant formality after knowing the love and affection that were possible was horrifying. Eventually, mostly due to Iris, they managed to get over it. Wally stopped being so bitter and mocking about Barry's faults. In turn, Barry stopped lashing out. It helped that Joe and Henry seemed to have an endless store of love available. Both boys were deeply and secretly relieved to find that there was room enough in the family for both of them. And now, Iris was gone. Barry sighs, turning to Wally.
I'm not sure how much good I'm doing right now, to be honest, he confesses.
It's still something, Wally says. I'm going stir-crazy, doing nothing. Dad'll be fine for a little while, acting just like usual, and then something'll remind him of her, and something just breaks in his face. I know it's way too early to give up hope, but he's so scared. Henry's handling it a bit better, but he's wrecked too. I just can't deal with it right now. Give me something to do.
Barry nods, grimacing. Okay, he says. Can you grab that box of pins and go over by the board? I'm going to read out a list of locations from the missives that came in today, and we're going to mark down where they are. Then we're going to go through each of them and figure out what makes each location distinct. I'll explain the color system I've been using. Wally nods and raises to his feet. They work late into the night, ignoring the sound of fireworks and laughter from the street below. The next morning, there's a pounding on the door to their house. It's a summons for Barry to come to the castle for breakfast. A literal summons in the form of an abashed-looking guardsman sent to drag him there, if necessary. Barry, bleary-eyed and under-caffeinated, crawls out of bed when Henry calls for him, feeling deeply bitter about Wally sleeping peacefully in the other bedroom. The guard explains that he has to escort him to the castle to ensure Barry's timely arrival. He manages to avoid making any punctuality or quickness jokes, which Barry appreciates, and while Barry is initially annoyed by it, he ends up welcoming the assistance. Because, honestly, if he'd tried to make the walk himself at this hour of the morning, they'd have found him next week floating in the river after making a half-dozen wrong turns. Though the thought of taking a nice long waterlogged nap sounds more appealing right now than it really ought to. He could be in his warm, comfortable bed right now. But no, the king has something he wants to discuss. Sometimes Barry hates being a prince. Barry ends up being the first one to arrive, ironically enough. He bids the guard who accompanied him goodbye. The man looks deeply relieved to discharge his duty and make a hasty exit, and collapses into his chair. There's a pointed meow from the ground, and Barry looks down at Snowy, who is reared back up on her hind paws and giving him a look filled with expectation. Right, he mutters. Breakfast. He reaches down and lifts her up, grabbing a piece of bacon from the center of the table for her to start nibbling on. How are you so svelte? He wonders aloud, still yawning, petting her soft fur. You eat more than the goat. Snowy swats at him with her paw, almost as if in answer to his words, and turns back to the more important business of eating. The door bangs open and Eobard and Hunter come in. Barry wakes up pretty quickly at that point. The entire story is evident just looking at their faces. Eobard's dark and stormy, Hunter's filled with malicious mirth. The apples still got stolen? Barry says, astonished. He might not like Eobard, but he doesn't doubt the man's genius when it comes to planning. Eobard would have done his utmost best to fulfill his task, no matter how stupid he might have thought it. This thief must really be something else to evade him. Yes, they did, Hunter snickers, grabbing a chair and sitting down into it. You should have seen the look on Eobard's face when they counted them up this morning. You let your guards sleep or something? I most certainly did not, Eobard snaps. I assigned a rotating set of guards, arranging for them to come and go in shifts to prevent anyone from falling asleep, and I added in secondary and tertiary sets to watch for alternate entrance points. Not a one of them reports falling asleep or failing to pay attention at any point in time. They should have been able to prevent it from happening. But they didn't, Hunter says, smirking. Now it's my turn. Indeed it is, King Harrison says, sweeping in. I assume you have a plan as well? Hunter's smirk widens. Well, unlike certain other people I might name, I don't actually mind doing some work myself. I'm going to take a full squad of guards and knights to keep an eye on the orchard myself. Eminently reasonable, the king says. With you there, they'll be presumably less inclined to doze off. You may requisition whatever resources you require. In other business... Barry? Barry! I'm awake! Barry exclaims, snapping his head back up from where it was drifting down to his shoulders, lulled back towards the welcoming embrace of sleep by the warm heat of Snowy in his lap, and her soft fur under his palm. The king sighs. Eat your breakfast, he orders, waving at the three of them to indicate they should start eating.
Now, as I was saying, in regards to the exhibition today, I believe we have...
Barry zones out of the conversation almost immediately, alternating between feeding bits of meat to a happily purring Snowy, and nibbling on it himself. He's already expressed his feelings on the subject of his continuing to attend the exhibition while Iris is gone, to his father, several times, and at length, and his father has wisely stopped trying to force his inclusion in various lesser events. Though Barry still can't escape these stupid planning breakfasts, because it would make it look like there's strife amongst the royal family, in front of all these foreign strangers. Though, to be fair, Barry thinks, seething in his father's general direction just on principle at this point, they wouldn't be wrong.
After breakfast, Barry spends the rest of the morning interviewing the messengers who delivered yesterday's missives at the front gate, to try to find out what they know about the other disappearances. Unfortunately, they mostly have rumor and gossip, but at this point Barry will take virtually anything. The laundry list of possible causes, ranging from a very clever kidnapper with a taste for well-guarded prospective brides, to a wicked sorcerer who needs to fill a quota for some unknown but certainly nefarious reason, to a dizzying array of supernatural creatures expressing their anger for some perceived slight, grows longer every day. On top of the traditional supernatural challenges, most towns have a local legend or two that they offer to Barry, no matter how absurd the legend. There's one which Barry is almost entirely certain isn't a Vodunya at all, but rather an unusually large bullfrog with hopes of obtaining a harem. Barry takes careful notes so that he can add them to his board of theories later. He's hoping that once he has it all together, he'll be able to pick out a pattern. He hasn't had much luck with the locations of the women. It seems to be fairly random, though it seems to be happening on some sort of a circuit. East, then west, then north, then south. But it didn't seem deliberate, more like whoever it was tended to grab women as they went. After he finishes with the messengers, the morning is gone, and it's already afternoon. Barry then goes to the guardhouse to pick up some of the material that was delivered from the other towns to take back to his lab at Star Castle. Barry's major contribution to the guardhouse was always his lab skills and scientific understanding. He puts them to work now, working over every last piece of evidence he's been able to requisition, testing bedsheets for any residue, examining clothing, and one enterprising town sent him the door through which the relevant girl had apparently vanished. Barry wishes desperately for a footprint, a fingerprint, something to tell him that this was merely a very clever human. But the weather has been hellishly good this last month or two, and no kidnapping has yet happened when it was muddy enough to capture anything. Of course, this only contributes to the suspicion that the kidnapper is supernatural, even though Barry could explain about the effect of the weather on usable prints until he goes hoarse. King Harrison can't even complain that Barry's not being appropriately festive. He keeps the door to his lab open while he's working, and is willing, mostly, to answer questions for interested observers. He's totally part of the festivities. So there. Henry shows up in the evening to take him home. If it had been Joe, Barry would have asked him to bring the latest stack of messages that David received to the castle, and just worked until he fell asleep in his lab. But Henry is implacable. For someone who is generally regarded by his children as the nicer parent, Henry has a way with smiling and giving advice that finds you doing what he wants, regardless of what your original intentions were. Barry wants that ability.
Come on, Barry, he says, guiding Barry away from his desk, despite the longing looks Barry is shooting back at it. It'll all still be there in the morning.
But I could...
Come to dinner, Henry says firmly.
After all, you need to update Joe and me on the work you've been doing, don't you?
But there hasn't been anything. Joe is a guardsman, Henry says. He knows that cases aren't solved in one sudden burst of inspiration. Isn't that what he's always saying? It's all legwork and removing potential avenues of investigation? And teamwork? That's what gets an investigation done.
Besides, if we all think about the various things that you found, perhaps one of us can provide you with some sort of insight.
Barry smiles a little. You just want to solve the case yourself, he teases.
Henry smiles back. You know how many of Joe's cases I've helped him crack over the years?
Why, there was the one with the stolen bushel of herring.
I know, and you had the brilliant idea of where the suspect might be hiding.
Barry interrupts, chuckling a little.
He's heard the story a million times. Despite your only connection to the fishing industry being the fish you bring home from the market for dinner.
That's right, Slugger. You never know where your next break might come from.
Which is why you're coming home for dinner.
How did I know you were going to come back around to that? Barry complains, smiling a little to make it clear he's joking.
You're a pest, Henry.
And you're a workaholic, Henry replies. Just like Joe. It's amazing the sorts of things that can be taught to impressionable children.
Personally, Barry has always looked at King Harrison's equally tireless mania for work, both royal judgments and his private scientific works, and thought that he probably came by the trait of working himself too hard, honestly. But he doesn't say anything. Let Henry believe as he likes. If it was up to Barry, either Joe or Henry would be his real father, and he would have learned the trait at Joe's knee. Dinner is a tense affair, unsurprisingly. The table was already arranged to seat only four, what with Wally being away at school and only Barry and Iris still at home, but Iris's absence looms over everything. Barry talks about what he's been doing, getting the only laugh of the evening when he explains about the door. And Wally talks about the things that he's been doing at school, but although Henry tries, Joe isn't particularly interested in anything they have to say, once it comes out that Barry's no closer to finding Iris than the day before. The overall mood is grim. Afterwards, when Barry starts to head up to his room, Henry places himself in his path with the sort of smile that precedes the viewer being crushed underfoot. Yes? Barry says cautiously.
David dropped off today's set of missives, Harry says.
Good? I was assuming that he had. I was just going to go read them.
I've confiscated them, actually. You are going to go to bed.
But...
No, Barry. You can look at them with the next set that David said was coming in tomorrow. If you're going to be of any use to anyone, especially Iris, you need to be well rested. And that's final.
But Joe...
Joe agrees with me on this, Henry says, with the tone of someone who has ensured their spouse's participation, possibly through torture. Go to sleep, Barry. You'll thank me in the morning when you wake up with a clear head.
When the guard shows up at his door the next morning, Barry's a little less bleary-eyed and slightly more willing to come with him.
Slightly.
He picks up Snowy as she beelines for him. He's the first one again, which makes him suspect that his father has started actually planning meetings around his tardiness, which... ouch. And wonders idly how his father intends to prevent Eobard from going for Hunter's throat when Hunter strolls in gloating about how he caught the thief. Actually, Barry's a little curious to know how the thief did it, anyway. It's not that easy to get into Star Castle's precious orchards, especially not with this many people here for the exhibition and so many guards involved. Barry's initial instinct had been bribery, since there were a lot of very wealthy people just dying for a sneak preview of the apples, but the guards had been replaced several times, and it just kept happening. Maybe some sort of sneak thief? But surely the guards would have noticed it by now. Barry will have to make a point of asking the thief how he did it once he's been put in custody. Presumably, now that Hunter's captured him, he'll be given to the guardhouse to be guarded for the remainder of the exhibition. Barry'll have a chance to question him then. Maybe he'll have an insight on how the kidnappings, equally sneaky, were done. The door opens. Hunter's face is as black as Eobard's was yesterday. Barry is surprised into a very unwise laugh. Hunter's eyes fix on Barry.
Something funny? He snarls, his eyes twitching a little.
Snowy scratched my funny bone, Barry lies shamelessly, hiding behind a 10-pound cat.
What happened?
The apples were taken, Eobard says, striding in behind Hunter, with a matching scowl. Honestly, Barry's not sure if he's more pissed off that the thief had managed to evade them yet again, or that he can't even gloat about Hunter's failure because it was immediately preceded by his own. Eobard and Hunter's rivalry makes their bullying of Barry seem fairly tame. Even though Hunter claims he was on watch the whole night long. "My knights and I made regular circuits around and through the orchard," Hunter snarls. "I had some very fine men with me." "Are you sure you didn't use the opportunity to engage with your friends and get distracted?" Eobard says archly, crossing his arms in front of him. "And by distracted, feel free to read in drunk and sharing stories about who was the best at this or that." "Absolutely not," Hunter exclaims. "My men are far better prepared for situations of siege and watchfulness than your guards, and they were equally routed, if I may remind you. This thief is clearly far trickier than I had anticipated. Perhaps he's gotten in through a tunnel." "Oh, a tunnel. A tunnel nobody ever noticed during any of those circuits you mentioned you ran. Oh, that's bright. I'm sure no one ever thought to look for a tunnel." "Enough," their father says coldly from behind them. Eobard and Hunter immediately step away from each other and slink to their seats, trying to shy away from their father's glare. Hunter can't seem to resist one last jibe, though, turning to Barry and saying, "I suppose you're happy about this." "Me?" Barry asks, honestly surprised. "Why would I be happy about it? The apples are still getting stolen, and we haven't captured the thief yet." "Yes," Eobard says, drawling out his syllables like he's speaking to the mentally infirm. "But tonight it's your turn to figure out how to catch the thief." "Yes, Barry," King Harrison says, turning to look at Barry as he takes his seat. "What is your plan?"
Please give the order to post the normal set of guards around the gates," Barry says, leaning back in his chair and ignoring both of his brother's exclamations of disbelief. "I have an idea which I'll be working up in the lab today."
King Harrison looks at Barry suspiciously.
"And you'll be employing this idea of yours later tonight, in the orchard?"
"Absolutely," Barry says, sincerely. "Eobard used organization and numbers, which failed. Hunter used force and surveillance, which also failed. So I'm not going to use the same techniques. This is a science exhibition, after all. I believe that science can answer the problem."
The king nods, satisfied, despite Eobard and Hunter both rolling their eyes.
"Very well, on to today's business."
Barry tunes him out again in order to focus on the fact that he totally forgot that he was going to be guarding the orchard tonight, and he has no plan at all. Thank God for years of lessons on how to spout bullshit at the drop of a hat, lest Henry or Joe find out about any given caper Iris and Barry had embarked on. That line of crap he just fed them even sounded half-decent to Barry. On the bright side, he can probably make sure nobody bothers him in the lab today, under the claim of working on this mysterious plan. Probably even get a lot of work done. And as for the actual orchard watching, there are plenty of old tricks he's picked up at the guardhouse he could employ. None of them likely to work, of course, but enough to say he tried. Humming thoughtfully, Barry makes a beeline for the lab, where he does, in fact, enjoy a very peaceful and uninterrupted morning. He manages to get all the tests he wants done, even on the door, though unfortunately nothing turns up anything conclusive. Later in the afternoon, Barry doubles back home to take a look at the dispatches from yesterday and today. They're all piled up on his desk at home. Usually that sight would make Barry sigh, but these last few days he's seen it more as an opportunity to wrestle out even the slightest clue, the slightest hint as to where Iris might be, and he goes to work with a fervor.
"Barry?"
"If those are new reports, you can put them on the desk," Barry says absently, frowning at a handful of pages. "These two reports both mentioned a dark spot in the room, possibly related to the appearance of frost. Something else? Why would there be frost? Plus, the dead bushes outside, at least three of the earlier reports. He's not sure if it's enough to make a comparison."
"Barry!"
Barry looks up, blinking.
"Yes, Henry?" he says. It's rare for Henry to raise his voice.
Firstly, I gave you the new reports hours ago, along with your dinner, which I noticed you haven't touched. Henry nods at the now cold pieces of chicken on the plate that appeared at some point by Barry's side. Secondly, aren't you supposed to be watching the orchard tonight?
Oh, crap, Barry says, realizing how late it's gotten. King Harrison would forgive failure, but not totally forgetting about it.
I gotta run. Thanks, Henry! I made you some chicken to go, Henry says with a soft sigh, offering up a bag which Barry grabs as he sprints down the stairs, cursing to himself as he goes. Not particularly imaginatively, mostly just repeating one four-letter word over and over again, really. His father is going to kill him.
Despite this, he takes the back routes wherever possible, hoping that maybe he can slip over to the orchard without anybody but the guards noticing, and they'd cover for his tardiness. Luckily, it's fairly late at night, so most of the crowds have gone home, and he can run unimpeded through the streets. Equally luckily, he's done this so many times, he's actually developed some decent leg muscles and lung capacity. He keeps his pace to a decent jog rather than a breakneck sprint, figuring that since no one is technically expecting him, he can afford to show up looking like a sane person rather than an out-of-breath wreck like he usually does. He makes the turn into the orchard right around midnight, smiling and waving at the guards as he approaches. The smile fades off his face when he realizes they aren't waving back. Gustav, he calls, recognizing them. Anderson? No answer. They stand frozen and staring blankly, not asleep, not quite, but a similarly unaware state. Barry comes right up to them, frowning. He's never seen anything quite like it. He pokes at Anderson, who doesn't react in the slightest. Barry's turning towards Gustav to repeat the experiment when he sees a flicker of light from inside the orchard. He takes two steps towards it, then stops, gaping. There's a man there. Tall and broad-shouldered, arms and legs thick with muscle. But that's not what strikes Barry dumb. Falling from his arms and shoulders like a glorious cape made of flame, there are feathers. Wings. Each glowing with a ruddy reddish light, like a crackling fireplace. They sweep down his shoulders and curl around his bare sides, disappearing in the lines of his dark tan pants, which are his only apparel. His feet are bare and his eyes glitter gold in the reflection of his own flame-like light. He's crouching by one of the trees, a bag in hand, his other hand on the trunk of the tree, and he's staring straight back at Barry. Barry is suddenly struck by the sheer eeriness of it all. The strange, inhuman man crouched down low. Him standing just inside the orchard gates. The moon half full and shining down on the orchard, which is silent as the grave, with not even the crickets chirping. It's like a picture out of a story or a stained glass window.
"Fucking damn it," the man says. "This is why I don't plan heists without Lenny anymore."
Barry blinks, thrown out of his daze by the word heist, which abruptly reminds him what's going on here.
"You're the asshole that's stealing our apples," he exclaims before he can think better of it.
"Congrats, Barry. You've always applauded yourself for being the guy who listens to all the fairy tale stories, every single one of which is very stern on the be polite to supernatural creatures you meet life lesson. And the very first thing you do when you meet one in real life is call him an asshole." The guy looks equally bemused by Barry's reaction.
"Seriously, kid?"
"Well, you are," Barry's mouth says, without any input from his brain. It's like someone's handed him an enchanted shovel and he just can't stop digging himself in deeper with it.
"It's for a good cause,"
the guy offers, standing up straight.
"I don't care what cause it's for."
Barry hesitates, thinking about Iris.
"What cause?" "They're pretty and I wanted them."
Barry gapes for a long moment before blurting out,
"That's not a good cause! What the hell?"
The guy, though perhaps Barry shouldn't be using that word to describe him, because whatever he is, he's certainly not human, shrugs, his feathers rippling.
It was worth a shot.
And then, and Barry cannot believe this guy,
He turns back to the tree and plucks another apple.
Oh, hell no, Barry says. You put that goddamn apple down this instant!
The guy turns back to him and cocks his head to the side in a very bird-like manner, and suddenly that's when it hits Barry.
Holy crap! You're a firebird!
No shit,
the firebird says, scowling at him, and crossing his thick arms around his bare chest.
You're just now figuring that out? What gave it away? The fucking feathers?
Barry feels his face go red.
And here I thought they said you people were supposed to be quick, the firebird jibes.
And seriously, even the freaking magical creatures are doing it?
Barry sees red.
Now listen here, you arrogant, overplucked, carrot-colored goose!
The firebird's jaw drops.
Did you just call me a goose, you miserable little...
I am not going to let you steal our apples. Besides, between yesterday and the day or two before that, you practically stripped 3 trees bare. How many apples can you possibly want?
Maybe I'm hungry.
3 whole trees worth of hungry? What, are you on, like, the opposite of a diet? Barry says snidely. Fattening up for winter, maybe?
The firebird stares at Barry for a long moment, his face twisted with anger, and then he abruptly bursts out laughing. Taken aback, Barry blinks and realizes he's been having a shouting match with a legendary firebird in the middle of an orchard at midnight. And he can't even think that entire sentence without wondering if he's lost his mind.
I can't believe, the firebird finally chokes out, that you just called me fat.
Barry can't believe he did it either, come to think of it. Not least because the guy isn't fat at all. He's thick with well-defined muscle, with a tantalizing hint of softness at the belly. The sort of thing that you could cuddle up with very happily. Actually, now that Barry's looking, the guy is unbelievably attractive. But that makes a certain amount of sense. Though Barry's got to admit, when he thought about the legendary beauty of the firebird, he usually imagined more of a, well, bird. On the rare occasions he'd thought of a bird-human hybrid, he'd always thought the firebird would be more a devastatingly beautiful girl as opposed to an exceedingly attractive man. Mostly because...
Hey, I thought the story said you were a princess, Barry says, and the firebird cackles even louder.
That wasn't meant as an insult!
Do you just enjoy the taste of your foot in your mouth? Is that it? The firebird asks. Legends are wrong, or at least outdated. Most of them are about the knight with the magic horse that helps him capture the firebird princess and avoid dying in a pot of boiling water, right?
I mean, there are regional variations, but yeah, that's about right, Barry says.
My grandparents, the firebird confides, rolling his eyes. It's the one everybody hears about. Now, what is it you want?
Want? Barry says, confused. You mean, other than for this to start making sense? The firebird snorts.
Piece of advice, pretty boy. Don't go into orchard guarding as a career. How'd you get in, anyhow? Thought I froze the whole garden, right at the stroke of midnight. The whole shebang.
I was late, Barry admits, realizing to his horror that it was exactly that which had saved him from being frozen, just like the other guards.
Just my luck, the firebird says. Now, if you don't mind, I'll be on my way.
Without the apples, Barry adds immediately. The firebird rolls his eyes.
Yes, yes, without the apples. You're real touchy, aren't you? Can I go now?
Barry's eyes narrow. Why aren't you just leaving? You have wings.
Smart, the firebird says approvingly. Magical creatures follow rules, as I'm sure you know from your stories. With a magical creature, a deal's a deal, and the rules are the rules. But I'll do you a good turn, just for the laugh you gave me. And remind you that you ought to be real careful about what you agree to when dealing with one of us. You've caught me, fair and square. And now I need to bargain with you for permission to leave.
Oh, Barry says. That seems unfair. The firebird rolls his eyes.
I don't need that much permission.
He reaches out and plucks a feather from his wings and tosses it to Barry. It floats gently through the air and lands on the ground in front of Barry's feet.
There, you have a token of mine. That'll do well enough to pay my bail.
Barry says, staring down at the mesmerizing feather. He reaches down and picks it up, putting it in his pocket out of a lack of anything else to do with it. Thanks?
Seriously, that's the best you can do? Thanks?
The Firebird looks put out, frowning and crossing his arms over his chest again, which is a rather distracting sight.
I'll have you know that most people would kill for a token from a magical creature like me. And they'd damn well accept it with a smidgen more grace than just, thanks.
It's very pretty, Barry tries. That statement doesn't seem to help the Firebird's disposition any.
It's a magical token, he says, scowling at Barry. It grants the recipient magical powers and special abilities. Well, sometimes, anyway. It seems to vary for you humans. Can't say if you'll get anything, or even what. But there you go. It's more than just pretty.
Oh, Barry says. He has no idea what to say about that. Thank you very much, I guess? The Firebird sighs.
Yeah, don't mention it.
The Firebird pauses.
No, really, don't mention it to anybody. Firebird feathers can be bad luck if the wrong people find out about them. Play your cards right, and it'll be a nice plus. Play 'em wrong, and you'll find yourself on a goddamn quest.
With that unnerving statement, the Firebird opens its wings. They unfold and brighten at the same time, his arms rising to merge with the wings until he seems enveloped in flames. With one great downward sweep, the Firebird launches up into the sky, the resulting gust of wind strong enough to knock Barry backwards onto the ground. Barry's staring up at the sky where the Firebird quickly fades into a point of light, when Gustav leans his head in and goes,
Barry, are you okay? Why are you on the ground?
I think I stopped our thief, Barry says, still taken aback at what had just happened. He's not sure what else there is to say. Apparently, according to everyone else, there's a lot to say, to judge by the number of questions being peppered at him from the guards, many of whom weren't even on duty, but through a shared sense of professional outrage were hanging out in the nearby tavern. The bag partially filled with apples is brought out and examined. Barry whimpers a little when he sees all those hands touching pristine evidence, but he seems to be slightly in shock and can't seem to actually bring himself to complain. And someone gets sent to run the news back up to the king. In fact, Barry himself gets dragged up to the castle by some eager guards who tug on his arms and worry loudly that he's gotten himself enchanted by whatever sorcerer he surprised. The king is waiting at the front gate, somehow managing to look just as regal and intimidating in his sleeping robe as he did in a full set of royal attire. He looks at the bag and nods.
If the apples are still in place by morning, I think we can count the thief as stopped.
There was a great gust of wind, sire, Anderson offers. Right before we ran inside and found Barry there, laid out flat on his,
must have been knocked over by the wind,
Gustav hastily offers.
This is what we mean.
We think he might have gotten a bit of a bump on the head, one of the other guards says, which Barry objects to because he's pretty sure his head is fine, being as he hasn't said a word since we left the orchard.
Barry, are you well? The king asks, pinning him with his gaze.
Sure, Barry says. I'm just confused, really.
What happened?
I just came across the thief, Barry says, not entirely sure how to describe it. And told him to stop taking our apples. And he left.
King Harrison pauses for a long moment.
Right, he says finally. Take Barry to his room. He's clearly in need of some rest. Barry, you can sleep late tomorrow if you like, but I'll expect some answers come dinner time. Barry nods, or at least thinks he does. He ends up curled into his overly large bed in the room they keep for him in the castle, the one he rarely uses unless he's stayed at the labs too long. blinking and wondering if tonight was all a dream caused by overwork, and tomorrow he'll wake up and find it's his turn to watch the orchard, or something. He falls asleep easily. The next morning brings with it some clarity, especially since he's pretty sure he slept till it's already nearly noon. He'd nearly forgotten how much he likes to do that. Mornings are overrated, anyhow. Barry looks up at the familiar ceiling above his bed in the castle and tries to arrange his thoughts. So, to review the relevant facts. Barry ran up to the orchard late last night, encountered what appeared to be, and indeed confessed to being, a firebird, and they had an argument. The firebird left, leaving behind its bag as proof that Barry had, in fact, stopped his thieving, at least for the night. And likely for good if the firebird knew what was good for him, and then he got dragged up to the castle and sent to bed. Factors in favor of this being a true rendition of last night's events. He's in his bed in the castle, which he usually avoids. Factors in favor of Barry's memory being totally incorrect. Every other thing in that rundown. Maybe he fell asleep in the lab and had a very vivid dream? Or perhaps someone slipped him some chemical that made him see things? Had Hunter mentioned going out hunting for mushrooms anytime recently? Barry, who hadn't bothered to change out of yesterday's clothing before bed, thank you so much yesterday, Barry, groans and climbs out of bed. There's breakfast on a tray resting in his room. Someone must have brought it in while Barry was asleep. He shakes his head at the normality of it, and heads over to splash some water on his face in the bathroom sink, hoping he'll wake up and the dream will fade into something vivid but clearly fictional. Barry's wiping his face when it occurs to him that he'd left out something important in his rendition of yesterday's events, something which could help him determine whether it was dream or reality. The firebird gave him a token, a magical feather, one that glowed like a candle. What did Barry do with it? Did he leave it in the garden? No, he put it in his pocket. Barry feels up his clothing and pulls something out of his left pocket. Despite him having slept on it, the feather is as pristine as ever, as long as his hand, slim and pretty. Its core is red, like a ripe strawberry, but then it lightens until the tips are pure gold. The entire thing glows softly, even in the midday light, a steady light like a star rather than a flickering of flame. "Oh, crap," Barry says, staring at it. He's really been hoping the whole thing was a dream. That would be so much easier to explain. And the king would be wanting an explanation. Of that, Barry has no doubt. And Barry doesn't know how to square his need to explain the events of yesterday to his father without disobeying the Firebird's recommendation that he not show the feather to anybody. There's a scratching at the door. Barry instinctively shoves the feather back into his pocket, turning to look at the door in alarm. And then Snowy lets herself in, her finely tuned sense of when Barry is around to feed her, guiding her straight and true as always. Barry sighs in relief and smiles at his cat. Well, the castle's cat, really, but he's always had a soft spot in his heart for Snowy ever since she showed up at the start of the year, haughty and arrogant as a princess. The door swings shut behind her, and Snowy sits regally, licking one of her paws and giving him a significant look. "Yeah, yeah, Her Highness wants breakfast," Barry says, shaking his head and grinning a little at the normality of it all. At least some things have stayed the same, even if he is going to have to rework his entire perception of the universe to account for the fact that magical creatures are real. Not real in the way he'd thought of them, as symbols created to explain away mysterious phenomena, but real in the way his father thinks of them, as something to be expected and planned around. He can still rest assured that the sun still rises and the cat still wants people food. Barry turns and takes a step toward the table with the tray on it, intending on jogging over to grab her some bacon, and suddenly everything around him blurs sickeningly, and he's across the room before he can blink, bouncing off the wall so hard he's pretty sure he's moved some of the ancient stones. And also his ribs. Ow. He sits up from where he landed on the ground, astonished. Barry's room isn't the largest in the castle, but he is a prince.
It's at least 20 feet from the washroom door to the table, and he couldn't possibly have run across the room so fast. How in the world... Barry realizes that his hip is warmer than it ought to be, like he has a warm compress in his pocket, and that it's emanating from the feather he's hid there.
"Magical powers and special abilities,"
the Firebird had offhandedly said last night. "A magical token grants magical powers and special abilities." Barry realizes with dawning horror that he might have accepted more than he realized when he'd thanked the Firebird for the feather. And that was even after the Firebird had been nice enough to warn him to be careful what he accepted. "Oh, crap," he says again, this time with feeling. "You're telling me. What the hell was that?" Snowy says, stopping in the middle of grooming her paw and staring at him. Barry freezes where he's sitting and very slowly turns his head to look at her. He says, and reaches up to feel his head to see if he's concussed himself. No sign of it, and even his ribs don't catch and pull painfully, the earlier ache from hitting the wall fading as if it had never been. Maybe he's still dreaming? But he feels awake, and if he's not dreaming, magic is indisputably a part of the world, so maybe... "Snowy," he says very carefully. "Did you just speak?" Snowy, who has started to turn back towards the tray, slowly turns back to look at him instead. "Wait, you can understand me?" she asks. Yes? Since when can you speak?" "I've always been able to speak," she says. "But you've never understood me before. This is definitely new. What have you done?" Barry thinks miserably about his stupid acceptance of a Firebird's feather. He sighs and puts his head in his hands. There's really only one thing to say about this whole mess. "Oh, crap,"